news today on, we should have a good show. We've got two Jims, Jim Bailey and Jim Bagnall from New Zealand. If you can hear those bells chiming, I'm in the main street of Gunnedah in beautiful rural New South Wales.
Don't ask for whom the bell tolls, John. It tolls for you, mate. Indeed it does. So you're at your funeral, are you, John?
No, I don't know why the bell's tolling, but anyway. So it's interesting that Kevin Rudd is now looking very much like he'll be the next Prime Minister. The latest news poll shows Labor on 59 and the Coalition on 41, two-party preferred. That is a very convincing lead. It's better Prime Minister, something that Howard's always won, certainly over his Rudd's predecessors. Rudd is on 48 and Howard's on 36. And it'll be very interesting. We'll have all these people on later in the year, or we'll certainly ask them to come on the show, talk about family law reform and all those issues that impact on blokes. Wondering if Howard might have wished he had been more decisive in his reform of family law now. They reckon there was about 1 million votes in family law.
Well, he had his chance.
He had his chance, and no one can tell whether it's good or bad, so they don't know who to vote for these days. If he'd been more decisive, he may well have won 1 million votes out of it. Well, that's what certainly some of the pundits say. There's very interesting signs all over the place of a sort of change in emphasis on fathers' issues. One of those is the perfect husband left to struggle alone, which was in the Daily Telegraph on Monday. Yesterday, in fact, on the surface, Angus Hawley, the handsome owner of a successful events calendar, living with his family in a $4.5 million home on Sydney's Lower North Shore, appears to have it all, including a supportive and beautiful TV personality wife of 11 years, Antonia Kidman, the cachet of a famous sister-in-law, which of course is our Nicole Kidman, and two daughters and two sons. But having a perfect family and knowing how to deal with a perfect family can be two separate stories.
Oh, come on now. What about the old Keith Urban? He's chucking a few handfuls of sand in the works to the perfect family picture and rehab and all the rest of it.
Oh, we're all frail. We're all human. All too human, some of us.
Us blokes are. We are. It's about time those women realised that us blokes are human.
I thought this was really interesting. I'd like to have this woman on, actually. Psychologist Dr. Travis G. There is a truck going past me now. Psychologist Dr. Travis G. says there is a very little support for the supporter, and with nowhere else to turn can be open to depression or other illnesses. She argues that in society we train men to take care of their family, but as far as looking after themselves, there is no guidance. A simple internet search highlights how much information is available for women with postnatal depression, but very little pops up on the screen about how men can cope with a growing family. There is a complete lack of interest in men's emotional responses to family pressure. We'll have on shortly on the show Celia Astley, who's just written a book. She's also from New Zealand. We're doing a New Zealand special today. She's just written a book called He'll Be Okay, Growing Gorgeous Boys into Good Men. She's been a teacher, a school principal at boys' schools, and has worked in the prison system in New Zealand for many years. She's a very, very, very interesting woman, and she says very strongly, I'm a feminist, but I did not become a feminist to see men dishonoured in the way that they have been, to be denigrated and run down. And I think that's a very interesting position, and it's one that we've always basically maintained on Dad's on the Air.
Yep. It's a healthy position. It's the healthy position.
Yeah, it's a very healthy
one position. One sector of society cannot advance at the expense of another. It's just not on.
And we'll also have, there's been a lot of interesting furor over custody, child custody issues over there, Jim Bailey and Jim Bagnall. Jim seemed to be very active in family law reform, the fatherhood movement in New Zealand, so we'll be looking at that. This is the first of a series we hope to run through the year on various countries on father's issues all around the place.
Yep.
I thought, reading the tea leaves, I suppose, on the way that the debate is changing. This was a story we mentioned last week, but we might just mention again that fathers who are caring for their children face workplace discrimination. This is out of Victoria, and more Victorian fathers are facing workplace discrimination because they chose choose to care for their children. And this comes after a number of cases, including one where a dad who left work early once to care for his child and was sacked because the employer believed childcare was his wife's responsibility. And our ACTU President Sharon Barrow, who I've never heard say a positive word about blokes despite the number of men in the unions, said she was not surprised. And it's very interesting that a woman like this is saying these sorts of things. For increasing numbers of men who want to be equally involved in the care of their children, our workplaces are discriminatory, Ms. Barrow said. Designed for an era where men were breadwinners first, modern workplace practices of part-time or flexible hours are frowned on at best and at worst, often result in impediments to career progression or even dismissal. I think that's a really interesting...
Yes, it is indeed, especially all the money that they're spending on childcare, et cetera, so that women can go to work and keep flexible hours so that they can, you know, keep both hats on as mother and working professional.
Yeah, they never factor in the dads in all these debates.
No, not at all.
They're just not factored in.
No.
They're not represented on the government bodies that are forming policy. You look at the stuff that's come out of the New South Wales government in recent times on domestic violence and other issues. They consult all the women's groups. They don't consult any fathers' groups. They announce, you know, quite ludicrous policies because they haven't canvassed the real world.
They don't listen to us, John. They don't listen to us enough. We should be going live into Parliament House. They should be made. They should be forced. They should have headphones glued to their ears and they should be forced to listen to us.
That's true. Look, a very simple search of the net and it would show up a series of articles that have been running this month in the Star Tribune in America about divorce, women who walk. And that's a really interesting sign also that the whole debate is finally changing and asks, why are middle-aged women discarding their husbands? And this is by Catherine Kirsten. She writes, in our culture of divorce, it's increasingly women who are walking out on their marriages. Do these women blame spousal infidelity, substance abuse or domestic violence, the traditional marriage killers? Nope. More and more they're just becoming bored with their husbands, even if they still love them in some sense. One recently liberated divorcee summed it up this way. I love my husband, but I was not in love with him like you should be in love. They've all fallen, of course, for the desperate housewife syndrome.
Yeah, it's like the difference...
love out there somewhere.
Yeah, no, the difference between, I think, is it serotonin when you first fall in love, your body excretes all these hormones, you think it's all exciting, and then as you go on, it starts excreting this other stuff, which is just not as exciting. It's more comfortable, and, you know, once the romantic, the blaze and the fireworks is all gone, people think that they've fallen out of love, whereas they've actually probably entered a more stable, more realistic state where they can be more useful in the community and not be in love. You know, and going off on wild, I'm so in love tangents all the time and being idiots.
It sounds like some of these women have been reading too many Mills and Boone novels, the women's equivalent of porn, and getting too many high expectations of the fantasy knight in shining armour who's going to change their life forever and, you know, stars and fireworks.
Oh, I know. She just writes, and I'll finish on this, the core of the problem, it seems, is philosophical. In the past, our society viewed marriage as life's most profound promise. We saw it as more than a path to self-satisfaction. It was the bedrock social institution upon which all other relationships were built. Men and women expected adversity in their marriage. They pledged to remain faithful to one another in sickness and in health, and children were traditional to this view of marriage. Today, no amount of happy talk about co-parenting at work can disguise a tragic truth. Divorce harms children with long-term consequences for their health and happiness. And she says, also for those who go off chasing the dream, they end up in their old age home wondering what happened.
Yeah, pretty typical story. All right, John, well, look, we can't spend too much more time on you. I'm sorry, mate. We've got all these Kiwis who will be lining up and chafing at the bit to get on the program. So we're going to have to give
you a great show.
We're going to have to give you the boot, mate.
And
sorry about that.
We've got a great new song there.
Yes, we do indeed. Well, we played it last week. This is its second world first.
Shaving.
This is it. Okay. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Just echoes in the gloom. happy family. No faithful wife. I looked in the mirror and I said, this is your life. Now I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. I've been cut, but I ain't bleeding. I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. My children have been taken away. I'm alone with my worst fears. Stop you in the mirror. Not a pretty sight. I did my best. Maybe I wasn't always right. Now I'm alone. My family is gone. My world has caved in. And I'm all alone. Now I'm shaving.
Your response.
Okay.
You can top up your account by pressing the
what's happening? I think we've lost somebody. I think that was Celia Lashie there, and I think we've lost her by the sounds of all of that, which is a bit unfortunate. We'll just send Greg off to see if we can get Celia on. And in yesterday's Telegraph, Anthony Field, the Blue Wiggle, has welcomed his third child, him and his wife Mickey, their first son, Antonio Carlos, was born a healthy 3.5 kilogram baby, the long-awaited brother of Lucia Angela III and Maria Claire, 18 months, was born at Royal Prince Alfred Women's and Babies Hospital after a three-hour labour. So there you go. So there's some good news for the world. We have a new baby wiggle. The Blue Wiggle has had a son. And he has said... yes, the name, he's beautiful, he's a lovely little boy, said Field, who plans to tattoo his son's name on his arm where his daughter's names are already inscribed. So there you go, that's a happy story. Now, getting on to the usual stories that we have on Dads on the Air, which are not so happy, we have here, I have here an article from Judges and the Development of Parental Alienation Syndrome. Now, Parental Alienation Syndrome, PAS, is a pattern of thoughts and behavior that can develop in a child of separated parents where the custodial parent causes the child through manipulation and access blocking to unjustifiably fear and or hate the other parent. All right, it would appear that we now have Celia Lashie on the phone, so we'll just try and get that one happening, and I'll continue with that interview afterwards. Hello, Celia.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Celia. Sorry about the technical glitch there.
No problem.
You've written a book called He'll Be Okay, Growing Gorgeous Boys into Good Men, and this apparently came out of a project called The Good Man Project. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, it was just a project that started through a conversation, really. I have a history of working in the male prison system. I've been a prison officer in male prisons for a long time, and also was raising a boy. I had two children, and one of them's a boy, and became very conscious through the two things of how I had no sense of how boys become men and what it is that we need to do to help them in that process. And so that led to a conversation with the head of a boys' school in Nelson, and that led to a conversation with a group of heads of boys' schools, and we began this, what we thought would just be this tiny little discussion, really, with boys themselves about, you know, when do you think you'll be men? What are the roles of the men in your life? That sort of stuff. And mm-hmm. It just blew out from there, really. Quite a lot of fun. I laughed a lot with the whole... I ended up fronting over 18 months. The schools around New Zealand, just slowly, boys' schools got more and more engaged, and we thought maybe half a dozen schools would take part, but we ended up with 25.
Wow.
And could have gone more, but ended up, you know, calling a halt to it because I was drowning in testosterone by about then.
I'm sure it would have tested the limits of anyone, male or female.
Yeah.
So what did you actually ask the boys about, and what did they teach you?
They taught me an incredible amount. I mean, they taught me how to laugh a lot. We spent a great deal of time laughing. They are just boys and men. I now appreciate the male sense of humour a bit better and understand how, if it's possible to turn it into humour, a man and a boy will. And even in those moments where we want to stamp our feet and say, this is serious, you know, talk to me seriously. But at the same time, I got into some incredibly in-depth conversation with boys. I started by getting their confidence by actually simply telling them that I was there, that I had 15 years experience in the prison service, that I wanted to stop young men going. And the deal was that I would ask them some stuff and they could ask me some stuff. And so we started on an equal footing of them being able to ask me whether it was dangerous to bend over for the soap in the shower. And and once I answered that question with a very affirmative yes, and we then teased out what that actually meant in terms of prison, by then they realised that I was willing to talk about anything. And so...
Right, you'd sort of won their respect.
Yeah, and they were delighted. The thing that fascinated me is we often think, and there's some, you know, there's some learning curves for women in here, but we often think that boys either don't talk much or don't want to talk much. But in fact, they were absolutely intrigued that there was someone, that an adult was actually asking them about this stuff. And as long as I gave them time to think, which is the crucial part, as long as I didn't stay in their face and keep talking and learn to sit with silence, They gave me some incredible stuff, and they certainly educated me a lot more than I educated them. I mean, I helped them understand that prison isn't quite like the American movies would have us believe.
Right.
But that it's a dangerous place nonetheless, and that they don't want to be there, and how easy it is to get there. So I certainly did my best to get those messages across. But they taught me about the way they view the world. The two key themes that came out for me were how pragmatic boys are, how they make their decisions, and also their incredible intuition and this incredible communication that you men have of about 80% of the way you communicate with the world is silent. And we women often miss the subtlety of that communication because we're busy yapping.
Right. And while we men are just blindly going about our business.
You just roll your eyes.
Right. And we know that we're communicating, but the women around us are thinking, these guys aren't saying anything. What are they doing?
I've now had women say to me that they've often had the sense when they're surrounded by men, there's a conversation happening, but they can't hear anything. And I've actually said, trust me, there is a conversation happening. And often what we'll see in terms of parenting is that the father will look across the room at the boy and raise an eyebrow. And the boy knows exactly what his father just said, but you will inevitably hear the woman who's nearby say, what your father really meant was, you know, like we articulate, we constantly say it, when in fact the boy caught his father's eye and knew exactly what message was just communicated.
Right.
And we need to learn, one of the things I keep saying to women, it's not that we're wrong that we talk as much as we do, but it's actually about, I've watched with quite a great deal of sadness how much we miss what's written on men's faces. Because it's written there very clearly if we bother to look.
Right. Yeah. You touched on a subject there that what advice would you give to mothers in terms of communicating with their adolescent boys and also their husbands or their male partners in terms of sometimes women can do a bit of gatekeeping in terms of, you know, running the family. And what I'm trying to put this politically correctly, but
subtle, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There are two things for women to do, and that's part of the reason that I got involved in the project, because a woman can say this and men couldn't. I think quite simply, women need to learn to shut up. If you're talking to an adolescent boy, think of the 25 words you want to say and say three. Turn it into a three-word thing. And claim the personal pronoun. With an adolescent boy, claim that. I don't like it when you. I feel scared when you. Because you'll say, I've been lying in bed awake, worried about where you were. And he'll say, don't be silly, Mum. And there's no need to worry. And she needs to look back at him and hold his gaze and say, I worry until I know you're home. And don't expect him to then do anything with that. But what she's doing is she's given it to him, and he can now base his actions on the clear thing that his mother has told him, that she worries. In terms of men, again, it's be quiet. And also, the thing that we women seem to do is that we look for his ability to read our head. He's supposed to know that we're now angry. He's supposed to know that we want him to buy us, you know, a box of chocolates or whatever.
Right.
And we need to actually tell him. And know that when he first, like men, the majority of men that I'm now, as I'm now conscious of them, they will do whatever it is she wants them to do, you know, within reason. But I mean, in terms of, you know, if I need to go out, I need to know that we're going to go out and have a meal together, you know, once a fortnight on our own. Actually state that. Women somehow go to the place of, if I have to tell him that, he doesn't love me. And it's not romantic enough. But it's actually say it. And know that he'll be clumsy in the first few times that he does it. Like a friend of mine said to her husband, you never say anything nice about me. And so the next time he was going past, he said, you're looking nice today, and she responded with, I didn't mean you had to do it to tick the box. You know, like it's kind of like it, but he was trying, he was experimenting with how he might say nice things.
Right.
And we need to give them a bit of space to get,
right,
know,
to stumble and make mistakes.
Yeah,
but you know, after two or three times, then we actually get quite good at things.
You do get very good at it. And don't be, we women think that it's not romantic. You don't love me unless you can read my head and do it before I ask you to do it. And in terms of our relationship, and that's wrong. I mean, the men, you know, men are incredibly agreeable, but when I talk to groups of men on their own, they were so funny in their perception of their relationships. And, for example, just to give you a sense of that, I said to them, we're talking about the bridge of adolescence and how you guys need to get up on the bridge of adolescence.
Right.
And he looked up at me, and these are just ordinary, these are good guys, these are men who've shown up at a school meeting, for God's sake. And he said, Could you just, that's a great idea, he said, but could you just tell me where she is? I said, well, I'd quite like her walking along the edge of the bridge and meeting you at the other end if he's with your adolescent boy. And he shook his head at me and he said, nah, that won't work. And I said, why not? And he said, because she'll be yelling instructions from the side. And then the guy next to him looked up and said, mine would be the bloody troll under the bridge. So you kind of get that sense of, oh, God, you know. And I just, what I can actually say, and I would have imagined that I had a good relationship with men generally before the project, but I've come to a place of enjoying men a tremendous lot more now because I actually watch myself and sometimes actually want to put my hand over my mouth, you know, like, oh, shut up, enough already.
Yeah, do you think that the world's got sort of gone a bit too far in the sense of thinking that men and women have to be, for them to be equal, they have to be the same?
I think that's the issue. I think the dilemma we have, and it is a dilemma, is that we can still put our hand on the reality that a tremendous number of women in both Australia and New Zealand come into refuges because they've been beaten by their husbands.
Right.
A tremendous number of women doing the same work as a man will still, women's pay here, and I don't think yours is a lot better, our pay, you know, generally women's pay is about 80% of what men's is.
Yep, same.
So we've still got those kind of, those issues. So you need
right.
to hold those.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely in your sight. But at the same time, we need to understand that we have, we are dishonouring men to a significant degree. If you think, you know, the stuff that still comes across the internet and the humour that is poked at men would not be permitted if it was poked at women. So I still open stuff that people have passed around that they think is funny, and at the core of it is something about how idiotic men are. And TV sitcoms always play men.
Right.
Those sort of things.
Yeah, we had a professor from the University of West Australia speaking about that, who'd actually written a book about the way that men are portrayed in media these days. And yeah. It's not so much that that men are being picked on, it's just that because of the political state of correctness that women can't be picked on, and men are they're kind of the default candidates because they're the only one left standing.
They are the only ones left standing. We can't pick on religious groups, we can't pick on Aboriginals.
Right, minorities.
And we can't pick
right.
on women, so that just leaves...
So sorry,
you good old common garden bloke.
Yes, and so I don't want to take the humour out of the banter that occurs between the genders, but I think your point is, for me, the point is absolutely right, that it is not, equality doesn't mean being the same, and whatever, you know, whoever we are, and whatever sexual orientation or whatever focus we have in the world is made up of men and women, and there are times when, and I, you know, it's easier for me to think of this in the context of my son and then my yet to be conceived grandson, you know, that it's kind of, it's the, what I began very frightened of as I talked to these boys in schools was, what sort of a world are we handing to that next generation of males? Because these boys, some of these boys seriously believe they came out of the womb dumber than girls.
That's shocking.
Right, they've
bought that. Yeah.
That's shocking.
And these are educated boys that just have just watched the world. And they've also, I mean, there's another thread that ran through it. When I asked a group of 15-year-old boys who was in charge in relationships, they looked back at me and said, woman. And when I said, do you mean your girlfriend? They said, no, all women. And a 15-year-old boy cocked his eyebrow at me and said, you guys can have sex anytime you like. We have to work out if you're up for it. And he
wow.
was 15.
Wow.
Now, he, you know, the issue, when I've thought about him afterwards and thought, how, you know, I didn't fight as a feminist for that. I didn't, you know, that's the stuff that when all else fails, unfortunately, when we're pissed off at our partners or, you know, when life, that's what we withdraw. And so this boy, highly intuitive lad, from the age of 2, has been watching the dynamics of the female-male relationships around him, and he's learned that. And so that's very sobering for me because
absolutely,
that's
because
shocking.
I'm a feminist, but I did not fight for that to be
no.
reality.
Now we're running out of time rapidly, unfortunately. Just to get back to the Good Man Project again,
yep.
Did you gain any insights into why our young men seem to be disengaging from the education system in record numbers?
In a word, yes, because for a large percentage of them, it's irrelevant. If they can't make the connection between why they're learning something and learning it, then they just don't do it. So it's kind of it's more complicated than that. But the overarching theme in a quick response to your question is that they turn their attention elsewhere because one, the subject, you know, often the subject matter, they can't make the link, and the world around them isn't helping them make the link about why you need maths. If he knows that he wants to be a pilot and he needs maths, he'll do maths. And if he has a good teacher, if he has a teacher that engages him, he'll walk on broken glass for that teacher.
Right.
But, so there's that relevance, and there's also the that they're made wrong a lot. So the issue of the key thread that seems to me, and I'm not a teacher, but the key thread in the education system is to unwind the difference between boys' behaviour and bad behaviour. And we're often trying to make them into girls who sit still in neat lines and write neatly.
And that's actually not going to work.
Yeah, it isn't going to work.
No.
And your year nine boys, that group are particularly interesting for me, absolute little sods in many respects. But they need, quite literally, I decided the only way to keep them engaged must be to let them stand up every 10 minutes and put someone in a headlock and sit back down. And we're not building a system that allows for that incredible motion and movement of them.
Right. So we've got a lot of work to do to make our schools fit with our boys.
Our boys.
Yeah.
And to enjoy boys and to go back to a place where we can roll our eyes at how exasperating they are and how bad they smell and how much they eat. But there needs to be this core sense, and that's why the book's called He'll Be Okay, because they are gorgeous boys, growing
absolutely
gorgeous boys. And it's about reveling in that gorgeousness even while managing the level of exasperation they naturally bring with them.
Because they're going through a bloody tough time.
They are going through a tough time, and they're far more vulnerable than girls, actually, was my end assumption. The girls kind of package up life and use their friends and manage it, and the boys don't, and they just swill in it all, and it makes them terribly vulnerable.
Right. Thank you, Celia. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on today.
Yes, thank you.
He'll Be Okay, Growing Gorgeous Boys into Good Men by Celia Lashley is available through HarperCollins Publishers at any good bookstore, so look out for it. And Celia, once again, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Cheers.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're back on Dad's on the Air. Next on our New Zealand special, we have a guest, Mr. Jim Bailey, from an organisation called Hands on Equal Parent. You're in Auckland, Jim.
I'm in Auckland on the North Shore.
Fantastic.
Morning, Jim.
Jim, so we're trying to get a sense of what's happening across the Tasman in terms of men's and fathers' issues. Can you tell me what's your sense, the general sense of how things are over there for blokes?
Well, if you had have asked me that in the middle of last year, I would have been very, very excited and seeing all sorts of things happen, more media than we've ever got, in my memory anyway. But this year, we seem to have been seduced. We've broken back into what you term, I've heard you guys say on this program, we're just not getting it together as groups anymore. There is more happening, but on a smaller, much smaller scale.
Right, so do you think the men's movement over there is a bit fragmented and needs to unify a bit more to get things done?
I truly do. I think it's more fragmented than it's ever been right now. But as I said before, we seemed to get together last year a lot. We got more stories told and more men working together than ever. I'm not quite sure what's gone wrong, to tell you the truth. But
well, let's just hope it's a temporary lull and that... you know, the ship will get back on track.
Do you think the fact that you've got a female prime minister over there who's running the agenda, do you think that's got anything to do with the fact that...
Oh, very much so, yes. She has managed to make women feel a lot more powerful and arrogant and all the rest of it, and that needed to happen, I think.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the guys are not standing up alongside of that pride in themselves.
So do you think that in looking out for women and supporting women, they've also been shutting out men to some extent?
Truly, they have, yes.
Right, can you give me some examples of that sort of thing?
Well, I suppose I come straight back to my personal case. You mm-hmm. probably know I live on an invalid's benefit because of Hassel's health wife and bring up a son in an equal parenting relationship. He's here half the time.
Fantastic. You look like one of the lucky ones.
I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, the government cuts the legs from under me by supporting mum and nothing whatsoever for me. I don't want to go on about that, but that's a typical example of many factors where women running families are able to influence the future of their children far more than the men are.
And is that because technically she is the custodial parent? Is that why there's that bias and that she gets, you know, benefit and you don't? Or
well, we have a court-ordered equal parenting order and have had it for 7 years. So, no, she's no more ahead
right. Especially
than I am.
Okay.
And the court, in actual fact, the judge who gave me that order has made quite a fuss with Wins on my behalf. And even the order tells me that I can use it to make it very clear that we are equal parents. But it hasn't made an iota of difference. It did with child support eventually. And I haven't paid child support yet again, another lucky one, for a long time because, of course, I do the job.
Right. Well, you're sharing the care equally, yeah. so there shouldn't have to be any financial transfer. Yeah. So, yes, absolutely one of the lucky ones.
So I'm wrapped in that. But at the end of the day, the power is taken from under me because I don't have the money to do a hell of a lot. I struggle to buy him soccer boots, let alone anymore.
So what are you doing about it, Jim? I mean, you know.
Well, I'm hassling the government as much as I can. I'm probably
in what way?
Mainly email, visiting them.
Yep.
I've built a pretty big website. I've cooperated as much as I can with this wonderful new thing called SIFSWATCH. Which is exposing the nightmares caused by SIPs. I think you call them CPS, don't you?
Child Protection Services, right.
Is our equivalent.
And they're causing problems over there like they're causing over here.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Basically,
they've got so many stories. I've got about 40, 45, I think it is, stories on my website from the family court point of view, but they've got hundreds from the SIPs point of view.
Mm. I mean, you've got to cut them a bit of slack in that it must be one of the most difficult jobs in the world, trying to work out what's a false allegation and what's a real abuse and trying to sort of nut all that out. But still, they seem to really make so many terrible mistakes that literally ruin lives. And
I've stopped cutting them any slack.
You're one step beyond me.
Anyway, because of what I do, let alone watching the website. That's really exposing these issues. And strangely enough, the person I fight with the most, which is Peter Hughes, who's the CEO of WINS, our welfare, is the same boss for the SIPS group.
Okay.
So we're working in parallel there.
Good. Have you, and in your dealings with politicians and the government bureaucracy and the legal bureaucracy, have you, I know you often... find doors slammed in your face. But have you managed to find any allies? Are there any supportive voices out there who...
I have found allies, but sadly they're too quiet. You know, they're not the ones who are going to rush into Parliament like our Muriel Newman did.
Right,
and
they're not these sort of
agitators
like ourselves.
Activists. They're not active.
They're just simply not active. They're agreeable and nice and political, but they won't get out there and do the job. And that's really why a small group of us got to the point of working out this bothering technique. Do I need to go into that, or you probably know what I'm
talking about? We know a little bit about it. That was happening last year. You were picketing houses of judges and lawyers and people involved in
Although we need to go a lot further than that. We've mainly picked on judges and lawyers because everybody's annoyed with many of them. But it needs to go much further than that into picketing MPs, who, of course, do the legislation which causes the problems.
Yep,
right.
A judge, although they may have an agenda against males and dads, if there was decent law, they couldn't do that.
Sure.
And it's the MPs that make the law. So,
has this action been successful, in your opinion? Do you think that this picketing...
I think it was incredibly successful in the sense that it brought out so many stories.
So you got a lot of media coverage?
We got a heap of media coverage.
Yeah, you did.
I mean, at one stage, we're in the papers every day.
Yep, and you were covered over here as well, which is pretty huge for a news thing to leap over the Tasman.
So the English and Canadian guys used our media to encourage their fellas, and I do the same here as best I can. But yeah, so pretty exciting, really. But at the end of the day, somehow our men have been subdued into not doing that anymore because it's like naughty boys and all the rest of it. Well, I personally think it's the only way forward.
Sure.
So
you're saying things have got worse since, say, this time last year, was what your opening comment was, that things have actually gone downhill.
I believe so. And one example, I've just got off the phone to Viv Roberts, who has led the delegation in the Families Commission down in Wellington, where they were trying to present all these stories on my website and others to the Families Commission and then engage the family court in those stories. But, of course, Bosha, who's the chief family court judge, blankly refused. And basically that has now fallen into a discussion between those delegates, the Families Commission, to gain research papers. Well, I mean, are we going to wait another 10 years? So, that, you know, to me, that's just shocking.
It's just academia, isn't it? They just want reports and more, you know, books and more paperwork and more garbage to sort of waste time and resources and stop them actually having to do anything about the problem.
Well, we've come up with this little saying, which I think fits it perfectly. It expands the empire of injustice. Expands the empire of injustice, but it does nothing for families or kids.
Yep. So basically what's going on, it's pretty much similar over here, is that the family unit and fatherhood has been under attack for the last, you know, 40 years, and we are only just realising as men that we are under attack and are just starting to rally and defend our position. I mean, we're only just beginning to get active about it, you know, really in the 21st century.
I think you're right. The same is applying here, and perhaps the eccentrics like myself and one or two of the others drove it last year, but the others, we're waiting for them to catch up, because of course until we've got an army, there's not a lot we're going to do about it.
Well, you need to reach that critical mass where there's enough people to really make a difference.
Mm. And we find over here people who are happily married and in a situation that they can't imagine what it's like to go through a divorce and a family breakup and suddenly find you've got no rights and it's actually her house and they're actually her kids and you've just got to go out to work and pay for it all, and you might get to see them every second weekend and half the holidays if you're lucky, accuse you of being a paedophile.
But it's been very interesting in my own family. I have two cousins in a similar situation to me, one in fact now full-time parent. But in the trip through that, my so-called eccentric sharing with my family has now become, I'll start that again, the family's become much more sympathetic. There are now three of us in the same boat, and they're seeing. And I mean,
but you're not just a one-off weirdo.
I'm not just a one-off. So that mass thing has got to happen eventually.
Yeah, right. Unfortunately, the thing that only seems to be making any headway here is when the lack of fathering reaches such an extent that that kids are suffering so much from the lack of dads, and we're getting all these gang problems, we're getting all of these problems with suicides, and suddenly people are realizing, actually, maybe it might be good to have dad around the house a bit more and not shut him out. And but it's a shame it has to reach that level of before we actually say, well, families need dads, kids need dads, and dads need to have their families, whether or not they're together with their partner or not.
You're right. There was a release in the Herald this morning, and I believe the Dominion too, which is the big one in Wellington, big paper in Wellington, about the government cracking down on youth crime. Well, of course, if they're going to put their energy into there, they're basically wasting their time.
Yes, they are.
What they need to be doing is putting dad back into family.
And putting male teachers into schools.
Yeah, and male role models, yep.
Yeah.
I mean, when my boy was first coached in soccer, it was a woman coaching him. Now, I got nothing against the woman. She's actually really neat. I'd quite like to have her as my wife. But that's not right. That's not on.
Yeah, inappropriate.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Unfortunately, we're going to have to move on. We've got one more Jim to get through before the hour is up.
I'll look forward to it.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
thanks.
Thanks okay, for coming on the program, Jim.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
If you wish to make it up...
My woman, where can she be? Doesn't she know what she's doing to me? Where is my woman? Why has she gone? Without my woman, I just can't go on. I need my woman. I need right now. How could she leave me alone anyhow? I'm calling you, woman, come back to me. Without you, woman, I'm just misery. I'm so lonesome now she's gone. Yeah.
Okay, well, we're back with Dad's on the air, and on the line, hopefully, we have another Jim. Good morning. Good morning. Jim.
Yeah, hi.
Ah, found you.
The wonders of technology. Jim Bagnall is one of the spokespersons for the Coalition of Fathers in New Zealand. Jim, we were just speaking to Jim Bailey about the current state of affairs in New Zealand on, in terms of men's and fathers' issues. He was seeming to think that things have got a little bit worse in recent times. What's your take on it?
It's very patchy over here. Some of the judges within the courtrooms, and I've been in the courtroom 108 times as a McKenzie friend. Oh, before I just finish that, just say hi to Charlie Bagnall and hi to Sylvia Bagnall. They're my son and daughter-in-law. So
absolutely.
Hi, okay.
Hi, guys. How you doing? basically, there is a lot more reticence with some judges to produce very, very biased results. But on the other hand, some other judges just go on their merry old way, and the psychologists and the counsels for the child, and counsels for the mothers, of course. They just go on the same old way. And so self-litigation is, I think, growing in popularity in New Zealand, whereby you employ or you ask for the help of a lay assistant like myself, and you just go for it inside the courtroom.
Right. So it sounds like the old culture, while there's, you know, it's shifting slowly and slightly, there's still a lot of the old culture that's refusing to budge.
That's really true. I'll give you a quick example, and that is that a judge came down with a judgment quoting the law to say that a guy can see his children after 3.5 years with no care or protection orders involved in that. And the lawyers, the psychologists, and the counsels for the child are taking the judge to court to appeal the case.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
They're taking it to the High Court to appeal the case.
On what basis? I mean,
they don't appear to have a basis, apart from the mother feels that the children are being would be alienated against her if they were to go with the father. And, of course, the other way around is it's certainly happening the other way around as of now, you know?
Right. Well, it's... we'll have to wait and see what happens with that one. But
yeah, that's pretty horrifying, I've got to say. That's really horrifying.
Yeah.
Female hysteria driving the debate, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, and also there are a set of things that even the lawyers called ultimate weapons in the court. And one of the ultimate weapons of the court is to make accusations of sexual molestation of the child against the father in a sworn affidavit. And we got one guy over here who was accused 8 times of sexual molestation of the child. And legal aid financed that, even though each one, as it came through, was completely disproved, or there was no evidence for it, or anything like
it
that.
It was a crock, right.
And
basically.
This false accuser has got... taxpayers' money 8 times.
Oh, absolutely.
It wouldn't surprise me if, just by coincidence, she never managed to catch this molestation during any time prior to their separation, and suddenly it comes up 8 times. It sounds like a strange coincidence to me.
And it cost him $70,000. He didn't get any compensation. He got an apology off the chief family court judge, but he didn't get any compensation for it.
So he's out of pocket for $70,000.
Well, the father.
Yeah,
the father.
That's ridiculous.
He's got to fight the case with his own money. She can fight it with legal aid.
And there's no action taken against her in terms of perjury?
Absolutely not, no. The father said the chief family court judge said she's got mental health issues, blah, blah, blah. You've heard it all before.
Yeah, we've heard it. It's very similar over here. First they accuse you of being an alcoholic, then a drug addict, and then a pedophile. That's
and a rapist,
the runway.
Maybe. Rapist as well?
Well, pedophile, rapist, it's kind of implied, isn't it?
You know? Okay, yeah.
Yes. Well, now, Jim, you were over here in Australia a little while back meeting with some people. Was it from the Shared Parenting Association?
Shared Parenting Council of Australia.
Can you tell us a bit about that trip?
Yes, we went over here and we got a book, and it was written by the SPCA, and we called we didn't know a Shared Parenting Council of Australia. We thought it was Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Well, that's about right, mate. That's about right.
Yeah, you can see that one. There's parallels there.
Absolutely.
And we spoke to Jeff, and he's very good to us. And we lobbied a few MPs and stuff when we got back. But the feminist, the femi-fascist agenda over here is so strong that even those MPs who were lobbied and agreed to it decided to pull out of it. And so basically we formed our own party now called the Republic of New Zealand Party, got 500 members, and we're doing promotions for the party to incorporate changes within the family court, you know?
That's great. That's definitely affirmative, positive action.
Yeah, I don't know of anyone over here who's actually started up political parties along these lines. Maybe that's something.
Well, we've got Family First, who is a Christian-based operation.
Right, though their issues are broader than just men's and fathers' issues. But they do seem to be very supportive.
Well, they're on the same page as we are. We've interviewed Stephen Fielding, the
Well, we have no
MP.
Constitution in New Zealand at all. And so I'm busy writing a constitution at the present moment, and I'm copying some of the constitution off the Republic of Samoa.
So you've got a female prime minister over there. You've got. How do you think that is affecting the issue from men's point of view? Your female prime minister. You've got a woman in charge of the place.
We've got the Department of the Ministry of Women's Affairs and everything, and they've got tentacles into every single institution in this country, and no matter what you do, we've got 300,000 kids now plus not living in the same home as their father. Just twiddle that the other way around and say we had 300,000 kids not living in the same home with their mother.
Oh, you'd have riots.
How do you think the public would respond to that?
Right.
Whereas at the present moment, you know, no big deal.
Why is that? Why are men fathers suddenly, you know, why has the world decided that fathers are dispensable? What has caused this? What do you think, Jim?
Well, I think...
How did we get to this?
There was a pattern of behaviour during... I was a little kid during the Second World War, and so you can tell how old I am now.
Yep.
Fathers were away, you know, and so we were partial orphans, I suppose you could call us, and we just mainly lived a wild kind of life, living on our own. Our mum was looking after her grandma, and I think that particular... the two historical events, the First World War and the Second World War, created that parting of the ways, and we were fighting. I mean, my father was fighting against fascism, and hello, we got it back in the courts again.
Yeah,
you know?
Come home, and then the fascists have taken over the courts.
So this is the Third World War.
Yeah, well, it's the war of the sexes. You've got to kind of look at it. I mean, it seems like we're shaping up men and women. I mean, it seems that way. Our interests versus theirs, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Right. It should be the children's interests.
Absolutely. Yes. Once there's families and children's involved, then neither parent's interest should be primary. It should be the kids.
Jim, we're running out of time. Would you like to just kind of sum up and give us a, you know, you've got a couple of minutes left. If you want to just give us a big spiel, sum up the whole situation and your involvement in it as quickly as you can, and then I'm afraid we're going to have to leave.
Oh, thanks very much for inviting us to come on.
Thank you for coming on.
I'm inviting the youth of New Zealand at the present moment to look very clearly and very carefully about going to Australia, because your laws have at least been updated in this whole thing.
And well, we got shafted by a prime minister who promised one thing and then didn't have the balls to carry it through, basically.
But it has improved, slightly, marginally.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but the thing is that we are following your model of the SPCA over here as far as the fathers' movement is concerned, and on behalf of children, hey, let's do it together. You guys over there, us over here, and as far as you've spoken to Jim Bailey, well, he is in touch with lots of people all over the world, and it's a worldwide movement.
It is indeed.
It's got to be there on behalf of the children, I think.
Yep. No, it is. And we've got people like Bob Geldof. You know, it's the same in the UK. It's the same in the United States of America. We interview people from all over the world. It seems like we've got the same legal mess everywhere where men are basically...
One more thing. And we've been going at it 8 years. I've been going at it 8 years and all the rest of it. And the people refuse to negotiate with us, refuse to talk to us over here. So all I can say is that people that are younger than me are going to get far more militant than I am. And I abhor that. It's tribalism, and I don't like it. But look, as sure as night follows day, it's going to follow into militancy over here.
All right. Well, that's a pretty sad prediction.
Let's hope the powers that be... wake up before we reach that stage. Yeah.
Well, we need to have a wake-up call, and part of going on air like this is that wake-up call.
Well, Jim Bagnall, thank you for coming on Dad's on the Air. We appreciate your input.
All right. Thanks very much indeed. And hi, Charlie. Hi, Sylvia.
We'll keep in touch, Jim. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jim. Maybe we'll get you on again sometime in the future.
Okay, mate.
Okay, bye.
See you later. Bye. With Dad's on the Air.